Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Good afternoon, Iceman Insights, the Dirty D Amusement Park Radio, right here on 96.9 WYIR, the music bomb, starring the one, the only, the second greatest hockey mind in Evansville, just behind Brian Patafi. He is Michael Shockley.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Do we need to redo the intro?
Well, I see what you should do is you should introduce me as the second greatest behind Patafi and him as the second greatest behind me.
I'm not doing that. Because, well, maybe you tore me up on Facebook this week.
Ooh,
that was
yeah.
pretty nasty.
Well, if the shoe fits.
Yeah, that's true, too. Iceman Insights brought to you by IcemanManiacs.com, where Michael Shockley is the senior writer and webmaster there for all of your Iceman information needs. IcemanManiacs.com. So here we go with our weekly recap. At this point, just going to be happy with a win anytime it happens.
Yeah, very much so. The victory on Saturday felt like a hallelujah moment. Since our last show, the Icemen went 1-2-1. They're now 23-37-6 on the season. Compare that to the first CHL season, which was also rough. We went 21-32-13 that year. So we do have a couple extra wins at this point, and we've only played one more game than we had in that entire season. So at least it's not quite that bad, but it's still pretty bad.
It's that bad. There's, it's what we expected.
Yeah.
At least I expected.
It's what you
and,
expected.
And you expected it after you went through your 27 conditions.
Yes, exactly. we go back to last Wednesday the 13th. The Icemen went up to Fort Wayne, lost 6-3 to the Comets. The game was actually tied 3-3 early in the third period, but then Fort Wayne put it away late. The Icemen got outshot 47-33. Stop me if you've heard this before. James Reed in
47.
His, yeah, that's a lot of shots. James Reed in his Iceman debut made 41 saves. All three of the Iceman goals were scored by Dylan Clark, who had his first hat trick. He is now up to 19 goals in 44 games played with the Iceman. He has 22 goals overall on the season, counting before he came here. So he's at 22 with 6 games left. My question for you is, how many do you think he will end up with?
I was actually pushing for 30. He was so hot. He was playing on the T-Rob line. I thought, man, there's a good chance he could get a goal a game. But with 6 games left and the defection of the captain, I'm going to say 25.
That's about what I'm thinking, too. I think 2 or 3 more, maybe 4. But, yeah, I don't think 30 is in the cards
unless
anymore.
He gets instant chemistry with one of the new guys that pops up or something like that, or Crom goes with a Jason Dale, Patrick Kennedy, Dylan Clark line or something like that, because it's getting pretty thin at this point.
It is, yes. The one thing that could benefit him, though, is with Todd gone, Clark might become more of a focal point on the power play. So who knows?
You
got to
get
we'll
power
see.
Plays before you can be the focal point on the power play.
That's very true. Good point. So that was Wednesday's game. On Friday, the Icemen lost 3-2 in a shootout to Greenville at home. It was only the second shootout ever at the Ford Center, and the Icemen lost the shootout itself 3-0. Good crowd, though, 6,412, and they were loud. James Reed made 25 saves on 27 shots in a hard luck losing effort. Daniel Tatro was the second star of the game. He had 2 goals and nearly got a hat trick a couple times. He did turn what I'm calling a Tatro trick with 2 goals bookending a hit that blew up one of the corner doors. Yes, it happened again. It's, I think, the 4th time this season that the door in the corner of Section 119 has opened in the middle of play on a hit, which is just flat out unacceptable. There's no excuse for it.
Nope.
The Ford Center needs to do something. They have the ginormous bar that crosses the Zamboni door, but for whatever reason, that type of bar is not on the other three corners, and it is a problem.
I don't have a problem with that, but it looks like there's a lower latch on the one door that has to get latched first before the other one shuts. And my biggest problem is, who even goes in and out of that door? Is it Tommy Mason and the scorekeeper that goes out?
It opens the anthem. No, not the anthem singer, but sometimes if they have a group singing the anthem, they go in out there.
But not on Friday night.
No, not on Friday, I don't think. But yes, a lot of times, a lot of the off-ice officials, the penalty box attendants and Tommy and Steve Habler.
I have given up pronouncing that last name, so I will be referring to one of my favorite Iceman couples as Stephen H. and Mrs. Dixie Jack.
But she married into him. She's Dixie H. now.
I'm just going with Dixie Jack because I know I can say Jack all the time correctly and not say Jake. Mrs. Dixie Jake. I mean Jack. So you just got to keep it simple, stupid.
Let's get
back to the basics.
Okay. It's just ridiculous that that continues to happen, and something has to change next year because somebody is going to get seriously hurt if that continues.
I would suggest getting those just a bedpan. Bedpan and lock the penalty people and Tommy Mason in the scoring box for the whole game.
So they can't leave.
And just give them a bedpan and some nachos and some water to start the game. And just leave them in there until everything's done. It's just safer if there's less moving parts.
That's very true. But I don't like that. Friday's game was the second and final youth jersey giveaway of the season. They gave away 1,000 of them. The doors opened at 6 o'clock, and they were all gone by 6:07. I was standing there watching them hand them out, and it was pretty amazing to see how fast they went. There were more people waiting outside for the doors to open at 6 than we had at some games at Swander. It was crazy, but it was wonderful.
Yeah.
The big point of discussion after that was people talking about, logistically it didn't work out well because there were some people that were there that didn't get one and it should be better organized. And, yeah, perhaps there are some ways that they could tweak things and make it a little more organized so that it perhaps is a little bit more fair and make sure that everyone that is the first 1,000 really gets one and that make sure that no adults are getting one if they don't have a kid with them. But that's an issue is a great problem to have. So I think it speaks volumes about how far this organization has come that, you know, a few years ago at Swander, there were nights when they would give away 300 of something and they'd have trouble getting rid of them all. And now they give away 1,000 and they're done in 7 minutes and people are griping about them being out.
I think there's still a couple of crates of Pink the Rink t-shirts from 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Yeah,
at Swander.
I think they're still giving those things away. So
and part of it too is, you can't fault the Icemen for people getting extra ones or whatever because, just like I say with a referee, I can call the rule infractions, but I cannot make people respect each other.
Right.
And you can have a promotion and everything else, and you would hope that people would just take care of their kids and have enough respect and dignity for other human beings that, hey, I've got 2 kids, here's 2, and I'm going to leave the rest for the other kids. But people aren't like that, and it is what it is.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And you're not going to make them good, moral, respectful people by adding more rules and more constraints on the Iceman organization.
And let's be honest, they're hockey fans, so morals are thrown out the window anyway.
Pretty much.
So moving on to Saturday, the big win, the Icemen beat Kalamazoo 4-2 at home in front of 7,821 very loud fans. It was the second night in a row with a big, hot crowd.
And green ice,
yes. The green ice looked pretty good. It looked a lot better than the pink ice did on Pink the Rink Night earlier this season. And the green jerseys were awesome. They were really sweet looking.
Yeah, they were.
And the prices that they went for reflected that. but we'll get to that a little later. We have the full results from the auction later.
Teaser.
Yeah. In net, again, James Reed made 19 saves on 21 shots. The Icemen only gave up 21 shots in a game, 2 games after giving up 47. But that would be short-lived, as we'll get to in Sunday's recap. The goals on Saturday came from Colin Redden, Todd Robinson. Oliver Gabriel had an empty netter at the end, and the game winner was Daniel Tatro. Again, he's red hot.
He
had the game winner, an assist, and he was +4 in that game. He was deservingly so the number one star of the game.
I would have had him number one star on Friday if we would have won the shootout.
Yeah,
We had two guys with two goals, so I was just waiting to see who won the shootout to give the number one star to that team.
So he was the, quote, Iceman star of the game both nights, and deservingly so. The game was kind of back and forth. The Iceman led 2-0 after the first period, and it was a great period. That was one of the best periods they've played this season.
Outshot them 23-8.
Yeah, it was, and it was that one-sided, too. The Iceman just controlled the puck and took shots, and as Wayne Gretzky says, 100% of the shots you don't take, you don't make. So it helps when you just pepper the net. Good things happen. And it was proven on Saturday night when the Iceman took that 2-0 lead. But unfortunately, Kalamazoo did come back, tied at 2-2. And it looked like we might be going to overtime for the second night in a row, but then Tatro scored with a minute 26 left. And the winner was actually a bit of good luck for the Iceman. Seems like this year it's been, if we don't have bad luck, we have no luck at all. But the winner came when Kalamazoo had the puck in our zone, and there was a pass back to the point, and the defenseman tried to take a one-timer, and his stick broke on the shot. Puck goes out to the neutral zone. We ended up with a rush, and Dylan Clark went behind the net and then passed back out to a cutting Tatro, who buried it. And it was a nice play, and for once it was nice to see good luck befall the Iceman instead of bad luck. So that was a nice change of pace. Something interesting in that game, it was a 5-on-3. Kalamazoo had the power play, and they scored the goal at the exact second that the first penalty expired. The first penalty was assessed at 9:18, and the goal was scored at 11:18. So there was an argument. The K-Wings thought that because it was right at 2 minutes, the first penalty expired on the goal, and they should still have a power play. The Icemen argued that the penalty had expired because it had gone 2 full minutes, and the penalty was not on the clock anymore, and thus the second penalty expired because of the goal. And there was a long discussion, and the referees ended up determining that, yes, the second penalty was terminated. So the K-Wings did not have a continuation of the power play. But I actually went to the ECHL rulebook to see, and it is not addressed. There's nothing in the rulebook that says one way or the other what to do if a 5-on-3 and you score right as the first one expires. Right. So the only thing that I think could be the determining factor is the whole point of there has to be a penalty on the clock in order for it to be terminated with the power play. And since technically the first penalty was no longer on the clock, then the penalty with the least amount of time left on the clock is the one that expires. And there was only one on the clock, so that's the one that was terminated. So
yeah, I think it just goes to when that penalty expires at a stoppage of play, that penalty is expired. So it doesn't matter what stoppage of play. So even if it was an icing or a freeze by the goaltender, you would look up at the clock and say, wow, that's exactly 2 minutes. That guy comes out of the box.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what is expiring or what is stopping play, but the penalty has indeed expired.
Exactly.
Which leads to, that's why the next penalty is wiped out.
Right. And part of Kalamazoo's argument might have been a little home cooking as far as Mr. Habler on the
Stephen H. A little late on the trigger there?
Actually, it wouldn't be home cooking. It's just a matter of human reaction time. Yep. The goal is scored, and then it takes a second before you actually get the clock stopped. So maybe the goal really was scored with 1 or 2 seconds left, but by the time a human being...
2 seconds? You're going on the radio to say that Stephen H. ran 2 extra seconds off the clock after a goal.
Well, maybe he was peeing in his bedpan.
I'm telling you, that's the way to go for the safety of the players. Boy, Tatro was upset when that door came
open.
Yes,
he was.
He barked at old Jonathan, he smacked his stick. And
I was telling Steve Ford up from the Courier and Press, he was there for both games. I told him, it's a good thing there wasn't someone standing there at that door right when it happened, because I think Tatro would have taken him out.
Yep.
Not by the door opening. I mean, he would have punched them in the face. Because, yeah, he was not happy, and rightfully so. But let's see. I think that's everything on the Saturday game. You got anything on the Saturday game?
Nope.
All right. Moving on to Sunday. Let's not say we did. The Iceman went up to Fort Wayne, wrapped up this 4-game in 5 days.
Overnight bus trip.
Yeah.
Into it. Where a team's
game.
Waiting for you. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
And add to it the big surprise of surprises.
Correct, yes. Which we'll get to in a bit.
I'm teasing.
We are teasing like crazy today. the Iceman went to Fort Wayne, lost 8-5. They did score first, but then gave up 4 unanswered, and it was pretty much over from there. And like I was saying about the only giving up 21 shots being short-lived, the Icemen on Sunday were outshot 50 to 36. 50.
50.
That's half a Hun. 50.
That is a lot of work for your goaltender that has started 3-3 and 4-5 after he missed all last year with an injury. So
yeah.
How about that Reeder, man? That's
yeah, no
just
kidding.
Awesome.
He made 42 saves in an ugly losing effort. It's just sad that you make 42 saves and give up 8 goals. But yeah, he did start all 4 of the games in 5 days, including the 3-3 over the weekend, which we
predicted.
We figured that probably would happen unless he said, I can't go. And I thought he looked good in the home games. He only gave up 4 goals on 48 shots. So, yeah, Friday and Saturday we gave up fewer shots combined than we did on Sunday. Wow. But on the road, he gave up 14 goals on 97 shots. Of course,
it's the power of Iceman fans right there.
Exactly. There you go. And especially on Saturday, the green ice.
Yes.
He's kind of got this unorthodox style, and I had read that about him when we acquired him. He's not really butterfly. He's not really stand up. He just kind of flops around, but it generally is effective. So whatever works for him.
Yep.
And I also noticed he's pretty aggressive at puck handling. He'll come out and play the puck kind of like Dayton does. Karpovich is more of a stay in the net kind of guy, but Dayton's really aggressive playing the puck. And Reed, maybe not quite as aggressive as Dayton, but he does seem to like doing that.
And that is, as a defenseman, if you've got a goalie that does that and he's good at it, oh, it's like adding a third D-man back there. It just changes the dynamics when you're busting back and you got that winger forechecking on you, and then that goalie just comes out of the net and sends it like out of the zone.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fun to watch when you see a guy who's good at it.
Now
when they're bad at it, it's like, oh Lord.
Dominik Hasek was one of the most aggressive puck players that I've ever seen in a goaltender, and potentially one of the worst I've ever seen. He'd go in that corner and swing at it 3 times like the old Bugs Bunny cartoons.
That actually brings back a very bad memory for me. When I was a kid, I've mentioned before, I grew up in Indy as an Indianapolis Ice fan. And when the Ice were the IHL affiliate for the Chicago Blackhawks, we had Dominik Hasek in his rookie season in the minors. And I don't like him, A, because he was a complete jerk off the ice. I saw him multiple times deny children autographs. But B, there was a time when the Ice were in the playoffs, and he actually lost an overtime playoff game that eliminated the team from the playoffs by turning the puck over on an errant attempt at an outlet pass. He was trying to make a cross-ice pass from one corner to the opposite board through the crease.
Ooh, nice.
And the other team picked it off and put it into an empty net to end the season. So, yeah, I have fond hatred memories of Dominik Hasek's inability to handle the puck. But we digress.
Yes, as usual.
Yes. In that Sunday game, the Icemen got goals from Oliver Gabriel, Jason Dale, Dylan Clark, Patrick Kennedy, and Dan Tatro. He now has a 6-game point streak and a 3-game goal streak, and he is now quietly moving up to, he's in third in the league in scoring among defensemen.
Is he really going to retire?
Man, I really wish he would come back. But all the reports are that he's telling everybody he's going to retire and go into coaching, but he's still got it, man. I would love to see him back here next year, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case. On the flip side, someone who might continue playing but maybe perhaps should consider retiring is Phil Plant. He was -4 on Sunday. He is now -17 in just 26 games, which if you extrapolate that rate out over a 72-game season, that equates to -47, which is even worse than Todd Robinson.
As the benchmark for horrible plus-minus.
Exactly.
The former captain.
Yeah.
The one thing about Plant, though, is, and I think you have to do the same thing with Matt Jens, is this really who he is, or does the injury, are outside influences affecting this?
Yeah.
How bad was that back that he was playing through until he finally had to get surgery done?
Right.
Not just take a couple of weeks off, get surgery done.
Right.
And then when he comes back, this team is devastated. The affiliates have ripped everything out of here. We were playing with 13 men, so is he really minus 17 in 26 games, or is he still an even player at this level?
Yeah, I don't know. It is tough to say, and his back is still giving him problems. He actually did not play either home game over the weekend because flared up. He played the two road games, but he did not play Friday or Saturday at home. So clearly the back is still giving him issues, but you also wonder... He had surgery, and it's still giving him problems. So is it time to hang him up?
Oh, yeah, that's a whole
different
issue.
Is it to the point where, you know, with Matt Jens, if you have reason to believe that he can come back from the surgery good as new, cool. But with Plante, he had the surgery, which was supposed to fix it, and it apparently did not. So maybe it is time to hang him up. You know, the minus 17 is ugly. The fact that he only has 4 points in 26 games for a guy that used to be a significant offensive threat, including last season. So maybe it's time to hang him up. Maybe it's just time to say, listen, the E is not for me at this age. I'll go back to the CHL and play out my career there. I don't know. We'll see, but it's kind of sad to see the stat line that he's posted this season, because a good guy in the room, good guy on the ice, good guy with the fans, but clearly this is a season he would like to forget.
Transaction and injury report. Everyone is just waiting around their computers and radio. They want you to bring it up. The elephant in the room.
Bring what up? Did we sign an elephant? We've finally gotten so far down we had to sign an elephant.
In some people's opinions, we got rid of an elephant. But we'll wait.
So we gotta do our little the computer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes, in fact, we talked about a little bit last week that the Shockinator 8000 actually internal combustion failure as it continues to calculate man games lost to injury. But here at the Wired Coffee House, 111 Northwest 4th Street in the basement, Shockinator 8000 has been working feverishly since September 15th, which I think was our first official injury 2 weeks before training camp, continues to calculate these numbers. And we are now 66 games into the season. And how many man games lost to injury?
389, which means 400 is a lock at this point, because we have enough guys that are out for the rest of the season that we will hit 400.
Now, are you still counting Austin Medeski in that?
Yes, because he's still technically on our roster.
I was going to bring that up because Krom still has him on the marker board in his room.
He is still on our roster, and I think he's actually practicing now with Springfield. I saw him tweet a week or two ago that he was back on the ice practicing, but he has not returned yet. And he can't return. Even if he does return in Springfield, he can't return until they call his rights back up, because technically he's still here, even though he's not physically here. So as long as he is still on our roster, I'm counting him as one of our man games lost, one of our many. 389. We are now up to 57 different players that have dressed.
You should start calculating man games lost to defection.
Yeah, that might blow the Shockinator 8000 up. Yeah. 57 players have dressed, and I went back and checked. According to HockeyDB, that is the most ever. HockeyDB says we had 42 in the first AHA season, 44 in the second, and then 31 and 28 in the two CHL seasons. So 57 blows away our single season record and is more than the total of the two CHL seasons combined. Now, before you say 31 plus 28 is more than 57, I'm talking about individual players that played. If they played both seasons, that only counts as one. But, 57 is crazy. Going back to how we got from 54 to 57, last Wednesday, the 13th, the Icemen signed three rookies. Forward Miles McCauley signed to a standard player contract. And then two guys straight out of college signed to amateur tryouts, forward Adam Pleskatch and defenseman Chris Markowitz. McCauley
got his first point on Friday night.
Yes, he did.
Gave him a star for
it. Pleskatch has been playing well, too.
Yes, he has.
McCauley is wearing number 33, which to me indicates the team does not expect Vogelhuber to return. Otherwise, they wouldn't have farmed out number 33.
I have a tangent to go off of that later.
He actually played two ECHL games with Greenville earlier this year, but he's mainly been in the SPHL with Augusta with 22 games, 6 points, only 8 penalty minutes, so he's not super physical or undisciplined. He actually played for 6 different junior teams over 4 years, though, which is perhaps a source of worry. I wasn't overly impressed with him, but he didn't stand out in a bad way either. So far with In four games, he's got one assist and is minus four. Pleskatch is wearing number 27, Medeski's old number. He is a four-year college player. He was the scoring leader at American International College, which is in Springfield, Mass., where the Falcons are. It is a D1 NCAA hockey school, and he was their scoring leader all 4 years played, including his freshman season, which is pretty impressive. And he just finished playing this season. And I really liked what I saw out of him. He showed a lot of promise. Now, obviously, being slotted in that top line helps. But I thought he looked really good. He's got four assists in four games so far. He's even. And he's aggressive with the puck, too. He's got 15 shots on goal already. So that could be the kind of guy that you really want to keep around and at least give him a camp invite next season and see how things shake out if you have room for him, because he's got some potential. The other guy, Markowitz, the defenseman, is wearing number 14, which probably means Anthony Nigro's not coming back. He also played at American International College with Pleskatch. He was a top three defenseman for them all 4 years he played. He's not super flashy, but he's solid. He's kind of like a Nick Schneider or a Jesse Perrin. He's got an assist and is plus two in four games. And for those who might recognize the name American International College, that's actually where former Iceman player Chris Campanelli went to.
Ah.
In fact, I think it was Campanelli's senior season was Pleskatch and Markowitz's freshman season. So moving on, there were actually no Iceman transactions on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. But Saturday late night, something interesting happened. We found out it just broke on Monday. The news broke on Monday that Saturday night, or actually really early Sunday morning, former Cincinnati Cyclones goaltender and recent Peoria Riverman acquisition, Zoltán Hetenyi, the goaltender who they got in their trade with the Nashville-Milwaukee organization, he has been playing down in Orlando for the Solar Bears. Well, he was arrested in Georgia after the Solar Bears loss at Gwinnett on Saturday night. Apparently, he was at a bar at like 2, 3 a.m. Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. And he repeatedly groped a waitress, also screamed that he hated all Americans and black people, using the N-word in the process. And there was no mention of whether or not he was drunk. Now, if he was drunk, that means he got drunk and crazy. If he wasn't drunk, that means he's just a D-bag. But
yeah.
He was charged with three counts of sexual battery, one count of disorderly conduct, had a $40,000 bond, which I don't exactly have that lying around in the couch cushions. I don't know about you. And as a result, he's still in jail as of Monday afternoon. That's the last report we saw. And Orlando pretty much told Peoria he's not playing here anymore.
He's not our responsibility.
Yeah, we're not
come
worried
and get
about
your goaler.
Yeah. Peoria hasn't said anything yet, but I'm going to guess he's done. He will be excommunicated from the American hockey community and perhaps excommunicated from the country.
Yep.
So, because he's originally from Hungary. I'm not sure. I don't think he has any sort of American citizenship.
Just that work visa.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And I think $40,000 bond charges, that's probably going to be in violation of that.
And now, the big news from Sunday.
Yeah, on Sunday, the Iceman, unbeknownst to everyone, it caught everyone off guard. Not everyone, but they sent a press release out that said that Todd Robinson had been granted permission by the team to go to the CHL with the Allen Americans and pursue a championship. So, technically speaking, he was placed on team suspension so that we retain his ECHL contract rights. And the press release was all sunshine and rainbows, saying that the office is happy for him and we thank him for his service. And
so you're saying the warden, Chris Phillips, wrote the...
No.
Because
I'm
that's
not
the way he runs that maniac's asylum, with sunshine and rainbows or else.
No, it was clearly a Terry Ficcarelli press release, and I think some of the quotes were Ficcarized. But
did he actually make people's quotes in alliteration?
No, he doesn't do that. But I think some of the quotes are indeed just, you know, tell him I said this, and then he puts it in his own words. But in any case, publicly at least, Todd is going to the CHL with the team's blessing. We'll get to whether or not that's really true a little later. He finished the season with the Iceman with 7 goals and 61 assists, so 68 points. He was minus 35 in 57 games. He was number one on the team in points and assists. And he is also number one on the team in points and assists in franchise history now. So he does leave.
Passing Aaron Nathan.
Yeah. and Nick Lindberg and Brian Bisek and many others. So, yeah, he is. He will be in the Iceman record books until someone sticks around more than a couple seasons. And
Dylan Clark. And, please be Dylan Clark.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'd like to see him here for a long time. I think this pretty much guarantees that Todd is not coming back next season. We pretty much expected that anyway, but I think now it's pretty much a done deal. But we will have a very in-depth discussion about his departure coming up in a little bit. The fallout for right now is without Todd, we don't have a captain. So Tatro has now taken over as the captain with Phil Plante and Jake Obermeyer as the alternates. So the team with the most goals allowed in the conference now has all three captains on defense.
You could probably also get the Shockinator 8000 computing number of captains in a season because
we've passed it around a little bit. I think we're up to six on the hierarchy because Todd was the captain, and at the start of the season, Matt Jens and Plante were the two A's. When Plante got hurt, Tatro took over as the second A. And then when Jens got hurt, Beaulieu took over as the second A. So you would think.
Now, what happened when Robinson got hurt?
When Robinson got hurt.
They didn't name a captain.
I don't think they named a captain.
But
no.
Did they have another alternate?
I think Matt Jens took over. I think at one of the jersey auctions,
right.
He was the C for that night. So, yeah, I think Matt took over because he was the only remaining of the original three.
But then you had to have another A.
That was when you had Tatro and Beaulieu, the two A's. So the hierarchy, from what we can tell, was Robinson, Plante, Jens, Tatro, Beaulieu, and now Obermeyer. But the interesting thing is now, Plante was originally a captain and Tatro was not. But now, with Todd gone, Tatro takes over as the C, but Plante remains an A. So it's interesting to see how that's played out, but...
When everyone was talking about it on Facebook, I was wondering if they would just leave the C vacated for the last eight games and just add another A.
I thought that might be the case, too.
Respect, remembering the captain. Nope, next day.
Yeah, new captain.
Sewing it on there.
Picture posted on Facebook and Twitter.
Smoke Adams sewing that C on there.
Yeah, they did not waste time. So, and I think Tatro is a good choice, especially with Plante's back acting up and not knowing if he's going to be able to play every game down the stretch. I think Tatro is the right choice for that job right now. So.
Well, and I think you saw his play. I don't know him that well off ice, but Crom went to him with an A very early in the season when Plante went down. So that kind of showed what kind of respect Crom had for him and how he controlled that room.
Yeah. Well, and part of the reason why he wasn't an A from the beginning might have just been he was new to the team, whereas Jens and Plante were both returning players. But he's more experienced than Jens. He's played longer, so... He certainly would have made sense as a captain right off the bat, but I think just because he was new to the team and we had three veterans returning meant you can be a leader, but you're not officially going to be a captain until something happens, which something did happen this season. A lot of somethings happened. Speaking of defense, on Monday there were no Iceman transactions, but it was interesting to note Peoria assigned our old buddy Brett Ponich to the Alaska Aces in the ECHL. And the reason why they sent him there instead of here is the whole point of this send-down is he's not playing in Peoria. Peoria is not going to be in the playoffs. They want him to get playoff experience. So they're sending him to Alaska so that he can get some experience in the playoffs because they are poised for a deep run.
Nice. How classy is that? After Patafi alluded to it a little bit last week about the affiliates and how horrible they have treated the Icemen this year, and here's another situation where we were forced to have all these players due to the lockout, and they said, we know that you're taking a lot of guys on. We'll take care of you through the season, blah, blah, blah. And now we have injuries and everything else, and they farm a guy out to another team. So it just kind of shows you that no one really cares about you except you.
Right. Yeah, it's part of the nature of it, and you'll see that too. And it's nothing new. That's not the first time a team has done that, where if their affiliate is out of it, they send somebody somewhere else so that they can get more work. Because ultimately, yes, their main goal is to win their games. Short of that, they want to develop their players. And if they think their players will get more development by going to a team down the stretch that's in the playoffs, then that's what they're going
to
do.
And you need to definitely listen into the interview at 2 o'clock today with Brian Patafi, because he talks a little bit about some of the changes that the Icemen are going to do in their dealings with their affiliates next year. So they have learned and developed a lot this season.
Interesting. Tease, tease, tease. We're just teasing fools, or maybe just fools.
Maybe it's because we're both wearing these red skirts.
So that takes us to the end of our transaction injury report. So I'll let you take it away, sir.
Well, let me just say this on air. We're at 35 minutes already.
Yeah.
And I'm going to want to defend myself in the Derek the speed bump section. So do we want to go to Shocker's rock song now?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. So
we'll throw you under the bus after this. Yes. Another tease. But first we have to plug.
Plug what? Oh, yeah, shoot. It's like I've never done this before. Anytime, 24/7, where do you go, Iceman fans? If you need up-to-date information on our ever-changing roster and our numerous injuries and the fact that we don't have anyone really left anymore from our affiliates because...
But we do have the elephant.
They are rotten bastards. But...
can you say that?
We'll find out.
All right. So long, everybody. Thanks for listening to our 21 and final episode.
Anytime you need Iceman information, do you go to the Courier Press? Do you go to the actual Iceman authorized website? Do you go to HockeyDB? I'll give you a little information. Yeah. But if you want all the information that you need anytime, 24/7, IcemanManiacs.com. You can click on the red logo with the handicap sign, and it'll give you up-to-date roster when you go to the end of that forum page. And now, for our best... Man, this is a long segment.
Yes,
if anyone is still listening out there, we promise 3 minutes, no talking.
The 24 hours of Iceman Insights continues.
Shockers, hockey, rocks, song of the week.
All right, this one, I have to, as much as it pains me, I have to give credit to a comments fan.
Suck.
Yes. Don Brecht, the resident comments fan in the Maniac Asylum on Facebook, posted this, and I wish I would have thought of it myself. Because Todd Robinson went to the Allen Americans, this is a song called Real American. It's by Rick Derringer, and people might recognize this song as a little ditty that a man named Hulk Hogan used to come to the ring to in the WWF. So in tribute to Todd Robinson, who is now a real American, he has the jersey to prove it. This is Rick Derringer, Real American, brother.
I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right, fight for your life.
Stand, it don't have to hide. If you hurt my friends, then you hurt my pride. I gotta be
And we are back here on Iceman Insights. Michael Shockley, the Dirty D, 96.9 WIR, music bomb. Throw me under the bus, for I deserve it.
Yes, indeed. This segment is titled Derek the Speed Bump, because we're throwing you under the bus, not for one reason, but for two reasons. First off, last week, our audio was terrible. We must apologize to all of our listeners, because it sounded like we were broadcasting from the inside of an aluminum shed. And the reason was?
I forgot to turn on the microphones. So we sat here for close to an hour and a half talking into the microphones. But only the laptop mic was actually picking up all of the audio. Mm. It's not the first time it's happened. And probably not going to be the last time. So what are you going to do?
So keep tuning in every week, and eventually you'll hear a sound like that again. That's why I was a little quiet last week, and you were very loud.
Yes, and comparison. That's why the room sucked. You could hear all the room noise.
Paper
and
rattling.
Echoing,
and, yeah.
Yes. My worst incident was broadcasting a Thunder high school game. We used to do that on WYR a couple of years ago, myself and my buddy Tyler Jackson. Mm-hmm. And everyone came up to us saying, we can't hear anything. We can't hear anything. It's just dead air. And I'm fumbling around and trying to figure out what was wrong. And I stuck the USB plug into the what's like the telephone jack port.
So it's just kind of sitting in there.
Yeah.
Flopping around.
Yeah. So that was my worst of all time, missing a whole period of action because I plugged it into the wrong port.
Wow. Are you adept at putting it in the wrong place?
Exactly. So I wouldn't say adept. And regardless.
You have a history of it.
Yeah. And it's only good for a minute and a half as well. But anyways, I screwed that up bad.
And the other reason we're throwing you under the bus is because you went on a lengthy rant about the Iceman office being too cheap to field a full roster.
That's not exactly what I said. I had some frustrations with this team and its underman roster.
And you went on a lengthy rant about the office being too cheap to field a full roster, and that rant was more or less nullified by Mr. Patafi when he made his subsequent appearance on the amusement park. All kidding aside, I thought it was really interesting the thing that he mentioned in that about how the SPHL, if you call a player up, if a player leaves the SPHL after March 1, they won't let him come back.
Yep.
And that is a significant barrier to higher level teams filling out rosters after March 1 because, yeah, you don't want to call a guy up, and if you only need him for a few games or might only need him for a few games, what if you cut him? Then he's out of work.
Yep.
So,
and there could be coaches without integrity that might do that.
Yeah.
That would tease, steal kids away from their SP and let them play 3 or 4 games and then cut them out of the blue when someone gets healthy and then stick them out to dry.
But
so.
at the risk of being a Rich Crum brown noser like yourself.
Yes, I am.
Rich Crum has more integrity.
Oh, definitely.
He's not going to do that.
Nope.
So that is a legitimate barrier. But still, I even said on the air last week, I didn't feel comfortable speculating when I didn't know the whole situation. And you said, I do.
I'll speculate.
So here you go.
Quote.
You are being driven over again.
Yeah. It was a frustration. But one thing, though, is I defended Crum in the whole thing, and I talked good about Ron Gary. So it was more of an issue of I didn't understand why.
Yeah.
And it did look bad from the outside.
Agreed.
Which is why I brought it up. But and the biggest problem was I couldn't figure out why. Why was this happening? And then Brian Patafi comes on and explains everything, and it has nothing to do with anything the Icemen are doing. So, yeah, that's good journalism as far as I'm concerned. you bring up an issue, and then you get taught a lesson.
Yeah, good people, bad actions.
Yes. Huh. But one of the things that also I learned about the whole thing is you've got to find someone that knows more than you do. And you got to have a relationship with somebody so you can ask those kind of questions.
And that's why you have me on this show every week.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. And I think I put that on Facebook right after you called me a egocentric diva, I believe is.
Well, if the slipper fits.
But we talked about it a few weeks ago. I told everyone that I had dinner with Brian Vall, and you learn so much of what goes on behind the scenes that no one has any idea about. The fans have no idea. Obviously, this Todd Robinson thing's been baking for a while. No one really knew about that. There were some rumors here and there that I heard about, but no one knew. There was speculation, but no one knew. And granted, we've got the Facebook page, Maniacs Asylum, with the warden that we can air our grievances and everything else. We got the radio show. I like to call it accountability talk. So what you post, what you say, we'll see if it pans out over time. But the biggest thing is you got to listen to those in the know, and you get taught a lesson. And I got taught a lesson last Wednesday and owning up to it now. However, there are problems, multiple problems from multiple sources where Iceman maniacs have close to verbally abused Iceman staff in public places in regards to the play of the team and fixing the power play and issues about the roster, et cetera, and issues about certain personnel. And it's just kind of creepy to me that... granted, I have worked as an off-ice official. I have worked with the Iceman all 5 years in one form or another. At one point, I was the broadcaster and the skate sharpener. and then I got fired from both. So, and I didn't hold any grudges because they brought in the pros. So not that I am the pro when it comes to skate sharpening, but I don't sew very well. And that equipment manager job comes with a lot of other crappy stuff to do with it.
It's not just about skates.
But I have a relationship there where I can ask questions. You've got Iceman Live where you can meet these players, you can meet Ficcarelli, you can meet Coach, and you can develop a relationship. But to just go up to somebody in a public place in Evansville and start ripping them, that is not being a fan. That is being a creepo stalker person and probably deserve to be locked up.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, we want fans, we want to make the players and staff feel welcome. We want them to know that we're passionate about this and we love this team and we want the team to succeed. But there's a line you can cross between making them feel welcome and making them feel uncomfortable. And if it gets to the point where they're feeling uncomfortable, then they're not going to want to be here. And that's a problem. There comes a point where your welcoming isn't actually welcoming anymore, and it ceases to be a help, and it becomes a hindrance. And that's a line that some people struggle to avoid crossing.
Yeah, and I think we have a bit of an entitlement issue, everyone here, especially the people that have been around a long time, since the very beginning or since season two, and we think that it is our Iceman.
Yeah.
And I even say our beloved Iceman, but they're our beloved Iceman because we are fans.
Right.
We don't own them, and we have no rights to them.
Right.
That is Ron Gary's thing, and Ron Gary hires the people that he wants to run it. So it is Ron Gary's Iceman.
Right.
And it is our entertainment.
And I think part of the problem does go back to the first seasons at Swander, because after games, the players would come out and everybody would just stand in the lobby and shoot the breeze for a half hour after the game. The players were there just visiting with the fans. And I think that level of availability, that level of interaction kind of spoiled people, because that's not how it normally is.
Well,
and now that we're in a bigger building, it's not like that.
Well, we're professionals now.
And right.
Those guys were pros, but they were single A pros.
Right.
And they were getting paid $50 and living in a nasty old jockey barn down in Ellis. And these guys are, it's totally different animal here.
Yeah.
These guys are married. These guys are committed to their physical abilities. They're not going out drinking in the bar until 2 in the morning, other than that goalie. But and a lot of them have to, a lot of home games, right afterwards, they're getting on a bus to go play 1, 2, 3 games on the road. So it is different.
It's a full-time job, and it's a completely different life from where we were 5 years ago. And unfortunately, some fans, and it is, I think it's probably a very small minority, but it only takes a few bad apples to make the whole bunch seem bad. Mm-hmm. So I think people really need to be careful. If you see players out in public, you need to sometimes just give them space. Don't even, you know, see them, nod, wave, whatever. But even if you're going to talk to them, be respectful. That's the biggest thing, is if you're saying something to them that you in their position wouldn't want someone saying to you, don't say it. That's, you know, it's the old golden rule.
Yep.
Do unto others. And it's as simple as that. If you would walk up and see someone else saying it to someone you don't know, and you would tell them you shouldn't do that, then you shouldn't do it either.
Agreed. And definitely, it's always good to have facts
Yeah.
before you say the things that you're going to say. As I promptly learned last Wednesday on the air
for everyone
to enjoy. And so, yeah, behave yourselves out there. Be nice to people.
Yes.
And you don't know the whole story.
You'll get a gold star if you're nice.
I don't know the whole story. And I call and text Crom all the time.
And every once in a while, he gets really drunk in response.
Oh, I mean, that was Michael Shockley's interpretation on the coaching staff. Farewell to the captain.
Yeah, this is what we've been teasing for almost an hour now. The big topic of discussion, of course, over the last week was the departure of Todd Robinson. As mentioned, he went to the Allen Americans in the CHL in pursuit of a championship, supposedly with the permission granted by the Iceman office. Word is that he is pondering retirement after this season, and he wants a chance to perhaps go out on top. So the interesting thing to me, I think, is Crom revealed on the pregame show before Sunday's game that the offer was actually made a while back, and Todd did not immediately accept. He actually was up front, went to Geary and Crom and said, listen, I've got this offer on the table. They came to a mutual agreement that he would stick around until we were mathematically eliminated from playoff contention, and then he could go with the team's permission, which I thought was really classy. He could have done what Baker and Perrin did and just accepted the offer and said so long, but he didn't. He did what I thought was the best way to handle the situation. If you're going to leave, now whether or not he should have left is an item for debate, but if you're going to leave, he handled it the right way. So kudos to him for that. I think players seem to get it. Now, yeah, inside I'm sure they're disappointed that the captain is leaving, but Dylan Clark and Jason Dale were the guests on Iceman Live this week, and Steve H., husband of Dixie H.,
Dixie Jack,
asked about it, and they basically said, it's a business, we get it. You know, I think as players, they understand there's no loyalty in this business, because when a player breaches his contract, essentially, he gets crucified over it. But when teams have the same contract and they decide they don't want to be in part of that contract anymore and just cut guys left and right, teams aren't held to the same standard. So there's a double standard there, the first of three double standards. So I guess there's a sextuple standard here.
You just had to say sex.
Sex, yes. Yeah, I'll work that in any way I can. But yeah, the fans are just absolutely going off the handle, though, because of this. You know, the big thing that everybody's saying is a captain always goes down with a ship. Well, I hate to break it to people, but this ship sunk a week and a half ago when this team was eliminated from playoff contention.
Well,
he did go down with the ship.
I'd like to say that
this
was not a playoff team. This was not a playoff team. We knew it from the beginning of the season. We had our Iceman blue colored glasses on,
yeah.
Some of us.
Yeah.
But this was not a playoff team.
Yeah. And at this point, everybody's treading water. You know, the fans are going to be here next season. The fans are Iceman fans. So we're going to be waiting for the ship to rise above water again and see if it'll sail next year. But not a single player on this team is under contract for next season. They don't know if it is their ship to get aboard next year. Even if the ship does come back up and it sails wonderfully, they might not be on board. So they don't have the same level of loyalty to the Icemen going forward as the rest of us do as fans. So when you say you need to be loyal and the fans are loyal and the fans are sticking around till the end, that's great, and fans should do that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that players should be held to the same standard. So getting to our tertiary and fourth standards.
Nice.
The second. I don't know what the tertiary version of fourth is.
Quad is something?
Quad.
I don't know.
You pulled your quad? I don't know. So another double standard that I think is this happens in the NHL all the time. You hear about veterans asking to be traded at the trade deadline so that they can pursue the Stanley Cup all the time. And it's just accepted as part of the business. And nobody goes killing the players over wanting to do that. But maybe that's partly because the Stanley Cup is held in such high regard and minor league championships are just minor league championships. I don't know. But I think that's a double standard that needs to be addressed. And also, the fifth and sixth of the double standards is I truly believe that if the exact same situation, everything, they approach him, he doesn't accept, he goes to the team and they work it out and you stick around until we're eliminated, then you go. If the exact same situation plays out with a veteran who is well-liked, even if it's a captain like Phil Plant, I don't think we're having the same level of angst about this. A lot of people would be disappointed that he left, but a lot of people would say, cool, good luck to you. I hope you get your championship. But I think the way it is viewed is clouded by the fact that Todd Robinson, whether deserved or not, just was not a popular player. His style of play did not resonate, and despite the offensive production, the plus-minus, the supposed lack of effort, which sometimes appeared legit, sometimes is just the way he plays, I think the way his style of game is perceived is completely making the backlash to this departure. It's going farther than it really should. And I think if you take the name out of the situation and apply the same thing to someone else, we'd be talking a completely different tune.
Yep. I agree 100%. And darn it, what was I going to say? I had something brilliant that I was going to share. It's gone.
There's no
room. One brilliant moment I had.
There's no room in your head for memory because the egotistical diva is taking up all the room?
I think part of...
no response equals agreement.
Some of the I get a kick out of the emotional response because this team, on Facebook, someone had put on there, this is an all-star CHL team, but it's not ready to play in the ECHL, which I think is inaccurate because I looked up the all-star team from the CHL last year, and Todd Robinson and Matt Jens were on it. And every new addition to this club was not an all-star. So you can't call this CHL all-star team.
I think Dan Gender was, wasn't he?
No, he was not.
Was he not? He was
no.
not an all-star?
You know who was? Brandon Marino.
Yeah, yeah.
And guess where he went? Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
And Brett Smith, who was also from Fort Wayne. So if you want to talk about a CHL all-star team in the ECHL, you have to look at Fort Wayne, who has 32 wins this year. And they're in 11th place, and they may not make the playoffs.
Right.
So there is a huge difference between what our roster is and what it will be next year. And so my emotional, I knew from the beginning of the season this was not a playoff team. No way, no how. And part of it is because I've seen how Crom worked in the first CHL year. He took a year, he put a halfway decent team together, but he just doesn't have enough time or energy to make contract commitments to players he doesn't know. He'll know a lot of players by the end of the playoffs this year,
yeah,
and we will have an awesome team next
year. This season was all about learning.
Yeah.
On
multiple
levels. Right.
For the Iceman organization.
Yeah, on the ice and off the ice. And I agree. I think next year, is this going to be a first-place team that challenges for the Cup?
Yes.
Maybe,
yes, it will.
Maybe not, but...
No,
but
it will be.
There is no question in my mind that it will be a better team, and significantly better. So, yeah, it's... Chalk this season up for what it is. This is like the first CHL season. It's an expansion team. It's a learning experience. You move on. And, next season is going to be a whole different story, and in a good way.
So, and the whole thing, I can't understand the emotional outburst against a Todd Robinson or against a Kevin Baker when he left town after he played his whopping 23 games with us or whatever. Now, I think there's also that something needs to be said is I'm speaking as a fan. Now, when other people inside that locker room, it's obvious that that Kevin Baker defection affected that hockey club.
Yeah,
inside that locker room. So I'm not saying that what I am not emotional about Todd Robinson leaving. It really doesn't bother me. It really doesn't surprise me because I thought this season was a wash anyways.
Me either.
But that doesn't mean everyone has to feel that way in the Iceman headquarters, inside the locker room. And if there's bitterness inside that locker room and they feel like they've been betrayed, they have all the right in the world to feel that way.
Yeah. And if they do, if that's legitimate, then perhaps that lends a little more credence to fans feeling that way. But what really cracks me up is times when you'll see when teams truly do not care. They're okay with somebody leaving or moving on or whatever. When something like that happens, and the fans get all bent out of shape about it, but the players, their guys' own teammates, are not.
I really wonder, we don't have any kind of numbers of what Todd Robinson was making this year, but we're assuming that he was a top paid, yeah, if not the highest paid, one of the three highest paid guys on the payroll, which puts him between $900 and $1,000 a week.
Maybe and a little more, but somewhere around there.
Somewhere in there. So basically, we cut him for 3 weeks. He leaves for the Allen Americans. The team saves $3,000. It's a last place team. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Opportunity to save $3,000 bucks. think is a pretty wise business decision.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's a full season salary for you if you were the defenseman.
Oh my goodness. And then some. So farewell to the captain. Do we have what captain was that in Iceman history? 5, 6?
Let's see. There was CJ Schneider and Isaac Coy in the A.
Warren Galloway was the first ever.
Was it Warren?
Yes.
I thought it was CJ.
No, Warren Galloway. We traded Warren Galloway for CJ.
Yeah, I think CJ. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Warren Galloway, then Isaac Coy. There were two in the A. Then in the C, we had Jeff Nelson and Todd last year.
And now Daniel Tatro.
And Todd remained. So yeah, Tatro is the fifth captain in Iceman history.
Fifth captain in Iceman history. And,
or the third captain in Iceman history if you subscribe to the office's record book that ignores the aha years.
No. How crazy is that people are trying to get fired up to put the AHA banner in the Ford Center?
I'm not paying for it. It's pretty awesome.
All right. So we covered that. Next up.
Real man of genius.
See, you do that better than I do. Next time, you're the high singing voice and I'm the low guy.
I do everything.
And then after this, we're going to get into the Patafi interview and then we will finish back up with another 72 minutes of Iceman Insights.
Yeah. On the air, Patafi will be next. On the podcast, we'll just continue on with the final segment of Iceman Insights.
How did you do all this with your computer blowing up last week?
This is probably why it blew up. So yeah, our real man of genius this week, this is not actually in tribute to anyone in particular. This is just based on real experiences I've had of listening to people in the suite elevator. For those that don't know, the elevator that takes you up to the press box, which is where I am every game, also takes you to the suites.
Otherwise known as the only elevator in the Ford Center.
It seems like, because it's always busy. But in that suite elevator, you hear all kinds of interesting discussion. And the one that cracks me up the most is the people that think they know everything about hockey when they don't know squat. So here we go. This is Mr. Corporate Suite Hockey Expert Guy.
Iceman Insights presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Corporate Suite Hockey Expert Guy.
Mr. Corporate Suite Hockey Expert Guy.
You've never actually been to a hockey game, but you gladly show your puck wisdom with your coworkers because you've seen the Mighty Ducks.
Quack, 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 Mr. Ducksworth.
Sure, you don't know if offside results in a face-off or a 5-yard penalty.
Maybe it's a 10-yarder.
But you do know the one foolproof way that any given hockey team can win every single game.
Flying V!
So we salute you, O savant of the skybox. You keep on teaching the game's finer points. And we'll keep on ignoring you.
Mr. Corporate Suite Hockey Expert Guy.
IcemanManiac.com, WYIR, Evansville, Indiana.
Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And Daddy.
And we are back here on Iceman Insights. Michael Shockley, the Dirty D, WYIR 96.9, music bomb. I almost said amusement park.
Amusement. That was not optimum pronunciation.
Oh, here we go again. Here we go again. So, the rivermen are sinking.
Yeah, we talked about the Iceman ship going down and the captain going with it. Well, that might not be the only ship sinking. The Peoria Rivermen might be in trouble. The Peoria Journal Star's Dave Aminion, who's their beat writer for the Rivermen, posted something Monday that the Riv's long-term future is in serious doubt. Apparently, the Blues, who own the Rivermen, are trying to sell or move the team, and they are not denying it either, which is a big red flag. The primary rumor is that they're going to sell the Rivermen franchise to the Vancouver Canucks, who will then move the team out to Abbotsford, B.C. And the team that's currently in Abbotsford is going to move elsewhere as the Calgary Flames affiliate. And if that happens, then the Blues would affiliate with the AHL's Chicago Wolves, who are currently the Canucks affiliate. So it would more or less be an affiliate swap between the Canucks and the Blues, with the end result being the Blues affiliated with Chicago, and they don't have to bankroll the team because the Wolves would retain their own ownership. So that's the primary rumor. That's probably the most likely thing that will happen. The other rumor is that the Blues might retain the Rivermen but move them, probably with a new name, either to Kansas City, which makes the most sense, Indy, maybe, or Evansville. And Aminian mentioning that is the first time I've ever seen Evansville mentioned as a possible home for the Rivermen, and I just don't see there's any way happening it, so I'm just going to dismiss that. But next season, supposedly, they will still be in Peoria, according to the Blues, but their non-denial that they're shopping the team makes it pretty tough to sell tickets and sponsorships, so who knows? They may be there, they might not be. But even if they're in Peoria next year, their long-term future is seriously up in the air. And something to consider is, if they do end up keeping the team but moving them to Kansas City, they would have their AAA farm team in Kansas City. Well, you know there's a AA team in Kansas City already, Metro Kansas City, the Missouri Mavericks, who are currently in the CHL. But especially if the CHL falls apart and the Mavericks end up in the E, they could very well end up wanting to take their AA affiliation to Missouri if they have their AAA affiliate also in Kansas City. So that's something to think about long term that could affect the Icemen, assuming the Rivermen don't move here, which I don't expect to happen.
Well, do you think a AAA and a AA club could exist in the same town?
It has happened before. I don't know that it would. I mean, Chicago tried it before. They have the Wolves in the A, and they have the Chicago Express in the E last year, and they folded after one season.
Right, but Chicago is also a town of a million plus people.
Right. I don't know that Kansas City can support it. The one thing I think the Missouri Mavericks have done well is promoting themselves as not Kansas City's team, but promoting themselves as independents and the suburbs of Kansas City. So maybe, but it would be very difficult. I would say that the Mavericks' future, while perhaps picking up an affiliation if they end up in the E and with all that, that would probably hurt their long-term drawing power if Kansas City gets an AHL team. Because I don't know that a market that, is not nearly the size of Chicago and doesn't have the same hockey history, if Chicago can't do it, I don't know that Kansas City could do it. But
now, granted, Chicago also has an N team as well.
Yeah,
so
that's true. So I don't know, but it's going to be something to watch. I still think the odds are it's probably going to be the Canucks buy the Rivermen and move them to Abbotsford, and then the Blues reaffiliate with Chicago. But it sounds like part of the reason behind possibly selling them is they don't want to bankroll an AHL team. So if they don't want to bankroll an AHL team, what's the point of keeping the AHL team and just moving them?
Yeah.
Maybe you're in a slightly better situation, but you're still bankrolling a team that's probably going to lose money. It's just a matter of how much. So
I think it's funny that Evansville gets mentioned. It's the second time in over a month that Evansville has been mentioned as a new destination. We are now the thing. From 2 years ago when the Ford Center was taking applications from leagues about teams, that put us on the radar.
Yeah.
So now a lot of leagues will say, oh, well, we're thinking Evansville is a potential market.
Yeah.
And the Federal League put out something a few weeks ago that said that they were looking at it, and it was complete hogwash. Bill Nadeau said, I haven't heard anything from him. But it's just one of those things just to drum up supply and demand and rattle the cages a little bit. We might move to Evansville.
Yeah, and I don't believe the FHL rumor for a second either. I think that was just a case of, oh, hey, they used to have a team in the AHA, so we'll say they're a potential market for us without even paying attention to the fact that, we still have a team. We're just not in the AHA anymore. So I don't think there's anything to an AHL team coming here. I don't think the market could support
because
AHL is so much more expensive. I just don't think it would work because they would have to raise ticket prices so high that the team just would not succeed. So I don't see that being a threat, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens. The Rivermen very well may not even exist next season. So that will obviously have – it may not affect the Icemen affiliating with the Blues, but it's going to change who's the middle team between the two of us. So going to be interesting to see what happens.
We got some hardware to hand out.
Yeah, got a lot of hardware to hand out. Got to give full credit to Rick Llewellyn, who came up with the idea for this. He said he and his wife were watching The Amazing Race, which the Battaglia brothers,
former
hockey players,
Toronto Maple Leaf,
yes, are on, and he thought that our Jens brothers would be the most likely Icemen to be on a reality show. Well, that spawned this idea for handing out tongue-in-cheek awards. Of course, the Icemen will have their official awards on Saturday before the home finale when they, Player of the Year and all that stuff. But we asked on the Asylum for tongue-in-cheek awards from the fans, and there were over 100 responses. And I'm not going to read them all. If you want them all, you can go to the asylum, and if you're not in the asylum, ask to get in it, and someone will approve you.
Or just avoid it all altogether.
Yeah, that's true. But some of the ideas Rick came up with off the bat were the This Isn't What I Ordered award for the biggest dud offseason or trade acquisition, Dan Gender.
No doubt.
I really liked the Veteran Conservation Connection award for the player that demonstrates significant energy conservation on the ice. And, of course, that went to Todd Robinson.
Of course.
And he came up with the Ron Jeremy Award for the player who scores the most. And that, at the time, was Josh Beaulieu. I think now Dylan Clark may have taken over the lead for that award. Rick and I collaborated on a few. We came up with the Dave's Taxi Award for the most call-ups to Peoria. That's actually a three-way tie. Cody Beach, Anthony Nigro, and Paul Karpovich have all been called up three or four times each. The Vaguely Vezina Award for the most outstanding ability to stop an opponent's shot goes to our goalposts. And the Weber's Whiskers Award, in reference to Shea Weber, the best playoff beard goes to... Oh, wait, never mind. Presentation of this award has been postponed until further notice. I came up with a few. I called the Vampire's Delight Award for the bloodiest injury. That goes to Josh Beaulieu. Honorable mention to Oliver Gabriel, though. The Invisible Man Award for the most talked about player despite not even being here goes to Brian Bisek. The Always a Bridesmaid Award for the most games dressed without actually playing goes to Kevin Moore. I think he's up to like 20 games that he's been here and he still hasn't seen action. The I Can't Drive 55 Award for the slowest slap shot goes to Anton Blomqvist. And the Dropping Deuces Award for the most two-goal games goes to Kevin Baker.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, there were a ton of good entries submitted by different people, and there's way too many to mention. Like I said, if you really want to see them, go to the Asylum on Facebook. But here are my top three. Number three, this is from Ben Early. He said, the Casper the Ghost Award, it looks like they're out there, but you can't really tell, and everything goes right through them, goes to our defense, collectively. Number two, formerly mentioned Comets fan Don Brecht. The Clothespin Award for letting his team hang out to dry goes to Kevin Baker. And my favorite, the number one fake award, Brad Perkins, came up with the Golden Carrot Award for the players most likely to attract puck bunnies goes to Jason Dale and the Jens Boys.
Nice, those Jens Boys.
So there you go.
Iceman trivia. I'm on a hot streak.
You're hot every week, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You're just thinking about Brian Vaal in the shower.
Maybe a little bit.
Yes, you did get last week's right. You broke a three-week losing streak by
getting
last week.
Don't even remember the losing streak.
Yeah, yeah. You are now 4-9 overall. So this goes back to this past Saturday, the St. Paddy's Day jersey auction raised a total of $22,500. An average of $978 per jersey, which is insane. That is the highest total and the highest average for an auction yet. It's the first time that 10 different jerseys topped $1,000, and it is telling that the cheapest jersey in this auction went for more than the average in all of the previous auctions. This one got crazy. The top bid was $1,225 for Jason Dale. That makes him the fourth different chart topper this season. The others were Robin Dore, Matt Jens, and Nathan Moon. The rest of the top 10, Tatro went for $1,150, Robinson $1,125, Aaron Jens $1,100, Derek St. Marie at $1,075, Mark Cody and Donnie Harris at $1,050, James Reed at $1,025, and Jake Overmeyer and Josh Beaulieu at $1,000 each. Some other notables, Dylan Clark went for $950, Matt Jens went for $925, which was the same as Dustin Hopfner, the defenseman who came out of club college hockey. Matt Krug and Adam Pleskatch went for $875. That Pleskatch one could end up being a deal.
I think that Clark one's probably a deal.
Yeah. Chris Markowitz went for $850. And last place tied Phil Plant and Kevin Moore, who has yet to play a game, at $800. So $800 was the cheapest when the starting bid was $200. That's kooky. So, this brings me to the trivia question. We have now had four auctions this season. The top 10 total draws were all part of all four of them. Who has fetched the most total money in bids in these four auctions. And I will make it multiple choice because these are the top eight in alphabetical order. Josh Beaulieu, Mark Cody, Jason Dale, Aaron Jens, Matt Jens, Jake Obermeyer, Todd Robinson, or Dan Tatro?
It's a good question. I'm going to throw Cody out already because you don't even have him listed in this one. So that's
Josh Beaulieu, Mark Cody.
Right, Jason but Dale. He wasn't. You don't have him this last auction. He didn't have a jersey auction.
Yeah, he was in there. He was 10-50.
Oh, I take that
he
back.
He was 1, 2, 3, 4.
Good thing. Ooh.
He was tied for 6 or 7.
Now I got to think. I am going to crack a window. Yeah. With Todd Robinson. Oh, are you kidding me?
So close, though. The answer is actually Mark Cody. $3,800 total, an average of $950 per auction, and he barely beat out Todd. Todd ended up drawing $3,775. So you were off by $25.
Yep. We don't even need to have buttons.
Yeah.
We just make our own sound effects.
Exactly. Usually with the correct end. The rest of the top 10, $3,650, Aaron and Matt Jens both. They ended up drawing the same total amount of money. Although Aaron did win 3 out of the 4 auctions head-to-head with his brother, but they ended up getting the exact same amount. Josh Beaulieu, $3,400. Tatro, $3,225. Dale, $3,150. Obi drew $3,000 even. Plant, $2,900. And Patrick Kennedy, 10th at $2,575. It is worth noting, Nathan Moon was only part of 2 of the 4 auctions, but he did end up with the highest single bid, which was $1,700. For the third jersey auction. And he also had
Star Wars night?
Yes, I believe so. And he also had the highest average at $1,100. So Moon would have certainly been up at the top of the list, I think, if he had been here for all 4 auctions. And he was on the roster, the printed roster for Saturday's game, but they did not have a jersey to auction off. So there you go.
Speaking of which, I'll return back to that tangent that I had 57 minutes ago back in our second segment.
Back on Wednesday.
What is up with our Iceman numbers? Why are we recycling the same numbers over and over and over again?
As far as guys come in.
For a year, we have the same number system and 14 and all the rest, and it's getting kind of old.
I don't know.
Why don't we have any numbers in the 20s?
You'll have to ask Patafi and Smoke about that.
Maybe it's an equipment issue, but why don't we put all the affiliate call downs in the 60s or something?
There you go.
61 through 69. It'll be hilarious.
Yeah. That number 69 jersey will win the next jersey auction.
Yeah, that'll win everyone, no doubt about it. But but yeah, it's just we kind of see the same numbers over and over.
Yeah.
Going back to that second AHA season, it seems like the same numbers just get recycled.
Well, in the AHA season, the same players wouldn't go anywhere, and they would change numbers from game to game.
Well, that's a little because Johnny McGay lost a jersey, or he got left in the missing sock is the missing Isaac Coy jersey, so he's got to wear something else. But
yeah.
I don't know how that works, but we do seem to just shuffle the same.
Yeah, you'd think they would have some oddball numbers available on a whim, you know, if somebody gets sent down at the last minute or something.
You just throw a nameplate
on. That's kind of how the NHL is. You're starting to see a lot more non-traditional numbers because a lot of the kids, when they come up to camp, they just get assigned, you know,
camp number,
74 or 92 or some random number that's up high. And then if they make the team, they just decide to keep it.
So anyway, speaking of equipment management, former equipment manager, now Iceman athletic trainer, Brian Patafi, and his tweet of the week. You can follow Brian Patafi on Twitter at bpatafi, B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E, and he currently has 263 followers in his quest for 1,000.
Slowly but surely.
Slowly.
Maybe not surely, but slowly. His tweet of the week this week. I'm not sure when he posted this. I see them and I jot them down. This tweet is, quote, newsflash, Honey Boo Boo's mom fell into a pond full of alligators in Florida. She ate 12 of them before they got her out. Hashtag gross.
Beauty. So, 6 games left, 2 games at home. Last chance to see our beloved Evansville Iceman this weekend.
Indeed. Wednesday, tonight.
Tonight.
The Icemen are at Toledo. Friday, against Reading at home. That is the night the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders will be here. I could not care less, but that's just my opinion. Saturday, the 23rd, is the home finale against the Kalamazoo Wings. The
Brian Bisek will not be here.
No, he will not. He is in Arizona. The Superstars will be here, though. And interestingly, that will be the 150th home game in the five-year franchise history of the Icemen, if you include playoffs. So this will be the 150th time we're showing up to root on the Icemen in an official game that counts. It's kind of crazy to think that we're at that point already.
It's also crazy to think that we've had one season over 500 in those 4 years.
and it's crazy to think that we're at the end of this season. We got two more home games and two more weeks, and then it's done. And that's kind of sad.
Not really. Not this season. I've been looking forward to next season since the start of this season.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if it helps you get out of the bed in the morning.
It does. Amusement park after dark.
Yes.
Speaking of teases.
Yeah.
Helping you get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, we're going to try to do amusement park after dark this Saturday after the Icemen game, after the home game. Whenever Terry Ficcarelli concludes the official post-game show, we'll flip the switch and go on the air and hopefully...
For the unofficial Facebook participant-driven wrap-up show. We're going to wrap up the whole entire season.
And who knows how long we'll be on the air.
Yes.
And it's going to include you, me...
And a few special guests, if we can wrangle them in. Steven Rickard he will be here if he can be here. So,
yeah. Otherwise, we'll see.
And we are assuming he will bring his testicles as well.
So you can touch them while you...
Whoa, come on! There's a line. There's a line, and you just jumped over it twice.
I think we've jumped over it many times.
No, not me. I know where the line is.
So, yes, Amusement Park After Dark this Saturday. We will do another show next week, an Iceman Insight show on the 27th. And then, by all indications, we will be off the 2 weeks after that on April 3rd and 10th, correct?
Yep, and then we will come back. We'll deal with some ECHL playoffs. We will ooh and ah over some potential free agents that we could possibly bring to this team as armchair GMs. And hopefully we can get some more information from Iceman headquarters just on breakdowns of this season and everything else.
Yeah, and that will be the 17th. The 2 weeks that we will not be doing a show on the 3rd and the 10th, I will probably be posting stories on IcemanManiacs.com. Kind of a, I plan on doing a season wrap-up. I plan on doing an attendance wrap-up. I plan on doing a story about kind of wrapping up the affiliations and all the moves and stuff. So I got some stuff planned for IcemanManiacs.com, so even when there's not an Iceman Insights, you'll still have some Iceman stuff to quench your thirst, because I'm sure once the season's over, people will start going through withdrawals quickly. And beyond April 17th, we kind of don't know how we're going to do this over the summer. We'll see.
Stay tuned.
We'll let you know.
I can't believe 2 weeks in a row, my perfectly glorious, fantastic hockey radio show is going to be sullied with basketball.
Yeah. Sorry. But
in the sense of self-promotion,
yes,
here we go.
I have to mention the Maniac Madness Bracket Contest launched on Monday. If you want to play, go to IcemanManiacs.com, click over to the Maniac Message Board. There is a thread that has all the information. We're doing it through Yahoo, so you have to have a Yahoo account to play. The deadline is Thursday before the first game in the round of 64. The play-in round does not count in the bracket contest, so you have to get in and have your bracket completed before Thursday's action starts. And on the line is a prize package from another radio station who shall remain nameless, but Mr. Rickard works for them. See what I did there?
I saw what you did there.
You appreciate that?
We don't support in any means possible basketball. Well, except for the fact that we broadcast Castle Knights basketball on this radio station. But other than that...
Did you pull a groin backtracking so fast
there?
Yeah,
a little bit. So, I guess that about does it for this week.
I think so. That's all the final thoughts I had. You got anything else?
Nope, that's about it for the Shocker. Well, actually, I do have quite a few, but I like to filter them out over a week's time so I don't get in any trouble.
We're already approaching, 2 hours this week?
Something like that. Everyone loves it. For Michael Shockley, the Vice President of Offbeat Shenanigans, as well as webmaster and senior writer for IcemanManiacs.com, and myself, the Dirty D. You've been listening to Iceman Insights on WYIR 96.9, the Music Bomb.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.